you? Is that you?
Hi.
Look. Look, you ought to stop this fool around, you hear? Who's in there, damn it?
This must be where the executioner was killed, it's the legend.
Mookie, am I going to have to put you in the back so we don't hear you gagging in the background? Hello, and welcome to the inaugural Scariest Things podcast, where we are your gateway to horror film, talking about the tropes and trends in the horror genre. And my name is Eric Lee. I'm your host, along with my good buddy and co-host,
Mike Campbell.
And we are finding ourselves in a golden age of horror movies at the moment. There have been a lot of great films like Get Out, It Follows, The Conjuring, lots of quality product hitting the market right now. And we've seen a lot of movies, and some
don't forget Zombievers.
Zombievers. Top shelf, baby. And we wanted to be your fan's guide to what's hot, what's coming up, and what to avoid on the streaming cast. So,
but maybe more importantly, well, not more importantly, because none of this is important at all. Importantly, give you a sense for how to get into horror if you don't know about horror, or if you do know about horror, we might just kick over that rock that you've never kicked over. And there might be something a little creepy under that rock for you to discover. We will help you do that.
So for our entry into the podcasting foray, what we are going to give you is
the inauguration.
The inauguration. The death list. And this death list is going to be our top five horror films. And this is blind. Mike and I have seen most of our horror movies together. We have some different tastes, but it'll be interesting to see. I'm very excited to find out when Mike's got listed.
And what makes this death list, because there might be some other death lists, is we have a grunting dog, A, very important.
If you hear gagging in the background, that is the dog. That's Mookie the Wonder Dog.
Because that's scary. And B, we're going into this blind. So we don't talk about each of these topics ahead of time. We don't contemplate. We don't ruminate. We just come in totally blind. There's no pre-coordination amongst us because we really want to give you guys an unfiltered,
spontaneous reaction.
Spontaneous reaction into the minds and eyes and hearts of somebody interested in horror.
So with that, I'd like Mike to start out with his number five.
Number five. So this wasn't part of the assignment, but I will say I didn't go in any rank order.
Oh, okay. All right.
So that's good. But we'll just do it. We'll do it. It's tough. As anyone knows, it's tough to get down to five of anything or 10 of anything or 100 of anything. And God only knows we're probably, what, roughly 100 years into horror films. So yeah. So getting down to five.
Yeah. I mean, you go all the way back to Cabinet of Dr. Caligari.
You go down to Cabinet of Dr. Caligari.
Nosferatu.
White Zombie. That might have been a little later.
A little later. I think it's a talkie, but talkie. Close.
Anyway. You go back pretty far. So, and the other thing that's tough is you don't want to lean too heavy on one genre,
right,
of horror, or subgenre, I guess, right. I should say.
Yeah, it was hard to.
I feel like I sound like I'm justifying everything I'm about to say.
So, I'm going to push Mike to prioritize because I've got mine ranked. I have a definitive favorite horror film that made a real impact on me, And it'll be interesting to see if it shows on Mike's list. I don't think it will.
Woo! Okay, let me see if
or
I
do you,
can...
Okay, given that, do you want me to start?
Let's start with you. And this is like when you're ordering, when you're at a restaurant and you have no idea what to eat. And so you make everybody order ahead of you. That's important.
So my pick is actually the most recent movie of my list. And it's a bit of a stretch on the genre in that I have a filmmaker who's currently very hot. It's Taika Waititi.
Taika Waititi.
And this is something that we saw last year. Funniest horror movie I've ever seen. I think it's right up there with Young Frankenstein. This is What We Do in the Shadows.
He gets best horror movie on name alone.
Yes.
Taika Waititi.
And, you know, so it stars Taika and Jemaine Clement as Vladislav. Taika plays Viago. And a great performance by their sound technician, Stu Rutherford, as Stu. If you haven't seen it, this is, it's violent, it's wacky, it's vampires hanging out together in a house. It's Spinal Tap meets vampires, but the thing that it makes it precious is that there are some of the best lines. There's like, we're werewolves, not swearwolves. This is a great one. There was a quote, leave me to do my dark bidding on the internet, to which the response was, what are you bidding on? I am bidding on a table. I mean, it is pure genius stuff, but the best line was a response to, I think we drink virgin blood because it sounds cool. And then the response to that from Vladislav was, I think of it like this. If you're going to eat a sandwich, you would just enjoy it more if you knew no one had fucked it. It was like, which had me on the floor. I mean, that's like, that is, any comedy, this was, it was a total surprise. I had avoided this movie because I have some friends who tell you've got friends like this who would say, you gotta watch this movie, it's so cool, and you go, I don't know, you're putting a little bit too hard to sell on it.
There's a disproportionate response to the more people say, you gotta watch it.
Right.
And if I hear, you gotta watch it more than three times, that means I don't gotta watch it.
Right. And so this one was, it's like, well, we'll see if it lives up to the hype. I kind of put it off for a while. Totally worth it. If you have friends saying you gotta see it, they're telling you the truth. It's a really funny movie.
Okay, you bent the genre.
I bent the genre.
You bent the genre. I was not expecting that. Total curveball. I was curveball, knuckleball, fastball, all at once. And I had to reorganize my list as you were talking about that. So that was the trifecta of curveballs. So I'm going to go with something kind of tried and true. I saw it in college. We didn't see it together. No. We were in college together, but we'll probably get to this in later podcasts. It was a film that came out, I think it was 1989. I don't have the IMDb or the internet's in front of me, and it was a film called Pet Sematary.
Oh, yeah!
Pet Sematary is a classic, not just because it has Fred Gwynn, which is, that'll get you classic. That's instant cred right there.
To have Herman Munster.
To have Herman Munster on the... Right out on the field for you. But the rest of the actors are good, up to and including the little boy, but... I think this film single-handedly freaked me out, stuck it in my memories for one scene and one scene only, and it's when the sister goes in, the sister of, this is the mother of the little boy who eventually is resurrected, goes in to meet up with her sister, and her sister has some horrible, horrible, awful, evil, twisted, literally and figuratively, spinal problem. And it is one of the most horrifying scenes you'll ever see as the sister slowly walks out of the room and the other sister moans and wheezes and gasps and cries for mercy. It's just a scene that stuck with me forever. And that almost alone... The rest of the movie is very, very effective. It's Stephen King, so everybody knows that. He's done a ton of stuff. But that one, just that scene alone, I think really, really got to me.
Wow.
Yes.
I think, you know, one of the other great things is I think it affects... That movie has legs, and I, in that it's... You can see elements of that in things like Stranger Things.
Oh yeah, for sure.
And the
not just because of the era either,
but thematically. I mean, it's just it has it is a prototypical 80s horror movie, and I think it's a cut above. I think
it's a cut above. It's got heart, but it's got some definite scares and some deep dark psychology.
Okay.
All right, so what do you got? What do you got for number 4?
Number 4
coming in hot.
Number 4 is one of those movies when I was a child, I knew I wasn't supposed to watch it. And
that would be everything. Yeah,
this movie has changed I think it's important because it's changed the way I behave. And this is Jaws.
Oh, yeah.
You're fooling yourself. If you don't go stare at the ocean, you go swimming, and you don't think Jaws. Yep. I love actually snorkeling and going out, but anytime I can't see the bottom, which I think also the best, scariest soundtrack.
We're gonna get there.
Oh, okay. We've got a challenger.
We got our first disagreement. We'll be getting there.
I will put the John Williams Jaws theme as far as ominous, dreadful. Something's coming to get me.
We'll get there.
All right. it has. This is a movie that has. And I think this is. It's not a sleeper by any means. This is a classic. Well, you know, but it. You know, Brody and Hooper and Quint, you know these characters, you know they're archetypal and the bonds that they have, you really feel for these guys and what they're trying to do. And you have the stupid mayor who's like, damn it, we're gonna open the beaches on the 4th of July and you can't stop it, and people get eaten, and it's wonderful in that way. And when the dog disappears and that opening sequence with the woman swimming in the water. And when she just gets thrashed around, and she's helpless, and I that stuck with me. I mean, that's one of the all-time moments in a horror movie in my mind.
Two words. Roy Scheider. Can't be beat. Okay. Can't beat that.
So that was my number 4. Michael,
number
what do
4.
You got?
Also, kind of, since Eric threw me a curveball right out the gate, I'm going to throw him a curveball. everybody would expect. On a top 5 list, you would have to say The Exorcist. I'm going Exorcist 3.
No.
Yes. Exorcist 3.
Oh, explain yourself.
Well, two reasons. Much like Roy Scheider, I'm going to say George C. Scott. I guess that's 3. George C. Scott. That's 3 things. George C. Scott. Great actor. He was really, I think, at the end of his career at that point. I don't think he did too much after Exorcist 3. Mm-hmm. But there's enough sort of strange and eerie misdirection in that film, up to and including one of the most horrifying scenes you'll ever see. And I don't want to ruin it for those people that have never seen Exorcist 3. But there's a scene in the hospital. As the story goes, Satan is sort of moving back and forth amongst a series of older people who have Alzheimer's or dementia, and one of the people sort of goes on a killing rampage, and it's a scene that really catches you off guard. Again, mm-hmm. saw this in college. Mm-hmm. This might be a theme here.
What year was that put out?
I believe it was put out in, I think it was also 1989.
So yeah, there's a big gap because Exorcist, what 73, 74,
yeah. So 89, 90, right in there. It's a really creepy film. I think in some ways it's even darker than the first one. The first one is, you know, it's a terrifying film, but if you watch The Exorcist repeatedly, it's really more of a psychological thriller, and it just grinds you down.
It's a slow build with just a brutal finish.
Right. This one's got some deep, dark atmospherics through and through. So let's go to number 3.
All right.
Number 3. It's only getting better. It's only getting better.
Well, this one's... Okay. First off, an admission. Both Mike and I are huge George Romero fans.
Oh, yes.
George
Romero did not make my list.
George Romero did not make my list either.
Woo!
I've
It's
I,
on. We, the, sorry, I have, sorry, George. Rest in peace.
Yeah. R.I.P. George. I have bumped my top zombie movie is 28 Days Later, Danny Boyle's showcase from 2002.
This is number three.
This is number three. I think, and this goes to my number one rule, in that I think that this movie has protagonists that you really, really root for. I think that you are, more than most any other horror movie, you want these people to survive. And, Cillian Murphy is brilliant as the lead protagonist. But there's a moment, spoiler alert, when Brendan Gleeson gets a drop of blood in his eye and he knows he's going to go zombie. And I almost wept. I mean, it was one of the most heartbreaking moments in a horror movie that I've ever experienced. Because they really warm you up to everybody, all the survivors. And the other thing is that 28 Days Later has almost a carbon copy start to The Walking Dead, right? That you start in a hospital room. And it's abandoned, and the whole town is abandoned, and it is a stunning scene of Cillian Murphy standing in empty London, right? And what the hell's happened? And then you get, and this may be, now this movie, I believe, came out before the remake of Dawn of the Dead.
Right? The Zack Snyder joint. I believe you are correct.
So. First fast zombies.
Yep.
And scary fast zombies. Right. I think better fast zombies than World War Z. Right. Better fast zombies than the Dawn of the Dead remake, which I liked.
Mm-hmm.
This movie had to bump Dawn of the Dead, which would have made my top 10.
Sure.
Down the list.
Yeah.
Because I think the difference is, even though it isn't necessarily game changing in what it's doing, I think it's got more heart and it's slick. It's a really, really beautiful looking production.
Oh yeah, no question.
Okay,
no what's question. Your three? Number three. Another curveball. Didn't see this with Eric. Mm-hmm. We've seen it, as Eric mentioned at the top, we've seen a lot of these movies together. We didn't see this one, but after I saw it, I made him watch it. In fact, I made him watch some very questionable copy found on the internet somewhere, but we watched it together. This is the 2009, now I'm stepping up into the modern era, the 2009...
Zombievers.
Epic, not Zombievers, but Ty West's masterpiece, The House of the Devil.
Oh, that's an awesome movie. I almost had another Ty West movie in there, but go on.
House of the Devil, it really also sticks with you. And speaking of slow burns, I've come to really appreciate the slow burn. And this is the slowest of the slow burn, to the point where you really don't even know if anything's going to happen. And the burn is so slow, and then as this poor young woman starts to piece things together as she's sitting in this creepy old Victorian house, mm-hmm. whether it's the fact that they wouldn't have owned a Volvo, the fact that she finds all of the pictures of the family, the fact that you see the inside of the room where the sacrifice has taken place, all this with the underpinnings of the Satan scare of the 1980s. Okay, I went back to the 1980s. But that Satan scare of the 1980s was very real for a lot of people. And seeing this come to life in this incredibly slow film that eventually explodes. Yeah. I mean, it's not a climax. It's post-climax. It is an explosion of terror at the end of the film.
Ty West is a director who's really, he's like a late 70s, early 80s throwback.
Absolutely.
And deliberately so. In fact, a lot of his stuff, if you watch it, he's as well as It and Stranger Things and those kinds of things, dial you back to that 80s feel. It's the film quality looks like it, and the pacing. I mean, it's built like a 70s horror movie.
Oh, for sure. There's not a lot of jump scares. In fact, what Ty West does is the double, triple fake out, where you think somebody's going to be, as you stand up or get down, somebody's going to be behind you, somebody's going to be in the mirror, and it doesn't happen. And sometimes that's That's almost more scary.
The false the you're prepared for the jump scare and it doesn't happen.
Yep.
That's fantastic.
It is. It is. All right. Let's go to number two.
My number
two. Getting closer to the top.
So this is
so close.
This is my love of body horror.
Ooh.
And just sloppy grossness.
Cannibal Holocaust.
No.
Come
no,
on.
I will not.
Come on.
Cannibal Holocaust is a bridge too far.
That's weird. We're going to cover Cannibal Holocaust in a later podcast.
That's right. There will be a what is pushing the boundaries of acceptable even for horror fans. Cannibal Holocaust is one of them. This All is right. not Cannibal Holocaust, okay. but this is from probably the director who is most associated with body horror, and if I'm saying that, who would you guess?
Body count or
no.
or just
like Ooh. Just deformation of the human body.
Ooh, not Leo Fulci. Not no. Toby Hooper.
Nope.
Oh, not Dario Argento, because that's not his jam.
David Cronenberg.
Oh, sure.
This is The Fly.
There you go.
This is the 1986.
Now we're getting there. Yeah. 1986.
So Jeff Goldblum as Seth Brundle.
You went with the classics.
I did. I mean, the funny thing is it shows our age. This is like I was actually, you know, I remember seeing this in the theater.
Right.
Snuck into the theater for this one. It is so gross. Right. But at the same time, this is the movie with tremendous heart. And it's really, you know, I think what the Jeff Goldblum, he should have gotten a Best Actor nomination for this thing. He was stellar. Mm-hmm. And this was Gina Davis's first big film. They got married after this film. I think they.
Oh, did they so really?
Like, yeah, true love.
I did not know that.
But there are some moments, you know, if it's like it's got the best barfing scene ever, where he barfs on the guy's hand and it melts, and that was like, oh man, that stuck with me. And then the best arm wrestling scene ever, where he snaps the guy's arm And then his face falls apart, but what you see is he's trying to hold on to his humanity and he's turning into a monster. He's trying to hold these. He's realizing what's happening, and it's an homage to sort of the nerdy, the mad scientist. We haven't had a lot of good mad scientist movies of recent. Mm-hmm. This is one where the mad scientist experiments on himself, mm-hmm. and he finds it both fascinating and terrifying.
Right.
And what he turns into is sad.
Right.
And at the same time, scares the shit out of you.
Right.
Right. This is
man's inhumanity to man through the prism of Frankenstein. Yeah. This is Frankenstein, really.
Yeah. It is like Frankenstein on himself.
Frankenstein on himself.
And you know, the old classic 50s movie, The Fly, I mean, that's fun. It's like, help me! You know, that thing, how can you not love that? That's the only thing that I would have loved if they had thrown a little help me thing in there at the very end.
Help me would have been nice. It would have been nice.
But you'll also notice that as I do have a love of some of the really old horror movies, but they're not particularly scary.
No.
And I think at some point, you know, I think that they didn't start getting really taken seriously until, you know, Night of the Living Dead. So you're gonna see a lot of this one takes precedent over its originator.
Right.
And I think you're going to see that with my top film as well. But Ooh. I'm going to shuffle on to Mike for
All right.
number two.
Number two. Also going back in time a little bit, going a little further back than Eric, because I do have a love for this decade, the 1970s. And we did see this one together in a theater. And in fact, they gave out... door prizes, white elephant gifts, because the film was Black Christmas.
Yes!
The 1974 classic, sort of a pre-slasher film almost.
No, I think you put Black Christmas and Halloween as the standard bearers.
Oh, sure. Sure.
And
but I mean, it did predate Halloween by 4 years. Yes. I don't know. I've never gone so far as to do research to figure out if there was any influence on John Carpenter, but definitely predated Halloween, and it really was kind of one of the very first slasher films. It's an interesting film. You had Andrea Martin, SCTV alumni,
Margot Kidder.
You had Margot Kidder, who you know it was she was on point, she was on her game at that point, but also
pre-crazy.
Pre-crazy. had some incredible atmospherics in the film, and there was a lot of twists and turns to make you, to misdirect you, to think the killer was somebody else when it wasn't. And also, speaking of just, like, films that culminate with a big crescendo, a big crash, this has one, and it also has one of the creepiest end scenes in a film that's so dark that really makes you kind of crawl out of the theater.
Is it the pullback with the bag on the head?
The bag on the head. Okay. Up in the attic.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, it's somewhat unbelievable, but at the same time, somewhat believable. If you can get into the film, this one will be a real sucker punch to you. So let's go to... Do you want to go to your number one?
I'll go to my number one. Let me. Well, I will ask Mike if he can... Do you think you know what my number one is?
I do. Do you want me to really guess it?
Go ahead.
I mean, this is part of doing an expository podcast. Right. I'm going to say Psycho.
Swing and a miss. No, my number one is John Carpenter's masterpiece, 1982, The Thing.
Ooh, and this nice. Movie, you really did go with the classic.
This is, it's, I can name each of the characters when they died and how, and most of the case, I mean, it was a fantastic cast, right?
Right.
Wilford Brimley, Kurt Russell, T.K. Carter, Keith David, Richard Dysart. I mean, it's a who's who of character actors, but it's more than, and this is a movie that people shit canned when it first came out. This was the fans didn't warm up to it, the critics didn't warm up to it, and the box office it tanked. And it was really too bad because I think it was too much. It was really gross,
right?
But and it was really intense, and it was truly and honestly really scary. And I saw this my first when I was 13 at a sleepover at.
You didn't sneak into the theater?
No, I didn't sneak into the theater. I didn't know about 1982. I didn't know about it. But then one of my buddies said,
"You didn't have your skeezy cousin give you sneak you in." And,
I wish I had a skeezy cousin to put it on the phone. But it was a... back in the day when we had these things called video cassettes.
Yes.
Buddy of mine said, guess what? I have a copy of The Thing. And it was a sleepover. And so there were like five of us. And we went over and we played it. And they said, this is going to be really scary. This is going to be really gross. And I was like, oh, come on. How scary or gross... And then the dog. They find the dog, and the dog peels like a banana, and I scream.
And it turns out it's both scary and gross.
Yes, and I ran out of the room. I hid in the back room and I wouldn't come out until I got coaxed out by my friends to say, Eric, come on, don't be a chicken. You got to go see this thing. And I
was it
came
that,
out.
Was it that or was it the Doritos?
Yeah, this was the pre one chip challenge. Are you familiar with the one chip challenge?
Oh,
okay,
yes.
No, this was me being a total chicken. But I was 13.
That's fair.
And my brain was not ready to handle what I saw. But I got coaxed back out, and I got to see Norris pop open like a bear trap and have his head pop up and crawl up into the ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to see the blood test and
yep.
And all of these things, these iconic moments, I know them by heart, and it made me a horror movie fan.
Oh yeah. For sure.
And
for
it is
sure,
a
for sure.
It's a classic It hasn't been. Nobody's repeated this thing. They
no.
No, not even really close. I mean, they did a prequel that was unfortunately ruined by some CG. And I've seen actually the actual physical props that they were
right.
going to try and do for that movie, and it looked really good. It's a shame that they CG'd it.
Yeah.
But Rob Bottin's masterful live or the real props.
Mm-hmm.
Haven't been topped. I mean,
no,
it was just, and the dude was
not
only 24 years old when
yep.
he did it.
He was
a savant. The sad thing is, he didn't do too much more after that.
Mm-hmm.
He kind of peaked with The Thing,
right?
But he gave us that, and unfortunately, I think John Carpenter, this was his chance to get a big budget,
right.
And since it did not do well at the box office, I don't know that he ever got a budget that approached The Thing again, which is a shame because he
probably not.
because I think maybe because I maybe Big Trouble in Little China.
Maybe, but was that? Yeah, I guess that was after. That was after the thing, right?
So yeah. So
maybe.
Anyhow, so but anyways, that one's near and dear to me, and you know, it's not really. It's on a lot of people's top lists,
sure.
So it's not surprising. But it had, I think, for me, not just like going bandwagon. This one hit me like a punch to the face. So
can't beat that one.
All right, Campbell, what you got?
If I had a top 20,
if I had
a top 20, I would go to the thing.
Okay.
Well, no, if I had a top 10, top 15, okay. Top 15. All right. You wanna give it a go?
I'm gonna guess. Suspiria.
Oh, ding, 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 ding.
Yeah!
Suspiria. This is where we get into the question of greatest horror soundtrack. This, of course, was done by the Euro synth demonic masterpiece known as Goblin. Goblin did the soundtrack, and this is a film you really, you know, frankly, the film gets a little long in the tooth as it goes on and on. This is a film that's set in Europe. It's a witch's coven. Young girl from America goes over there to study ballet.
Trippy.
Not with the witch's,
really trippy movie.
Not with the witch's coven, but she goes over to study ballet with an actual ballet troupe. Turns out, unbeknownst to her, it is a witch's coven. But the first 5 minutes of the film is really, you know, this is one of those films that you could honestly stop it after 5 minutes and you'd be probably pretty darn satisfied and terrified, because the first 5 minutes between the music, the atmospherics, the color, the lighting, just the strange set design, which caps off with a pretty grisly murder brought to you by the Witch's Coven. That pretty much does it. And from there on out, it just gets crazier and crazier as the film goes on. As I say, it's a little long in the tooth in parts, but this is Dario Argento, I think, probably at his finest.
Yes.
I'm sure there's Argento fans out there that would argue that.
No, I think this is... You'd be hard-pressed to argue this is not his high watermark.
Right. But I will say this. None of his other films have been remade, and I just found out as we were researching for the podcast that they're remaking this. It's coming out in 2017, so keep your eyes... 2018,
okay.
Correct. Yes, you got it. Yes, we're at the end of 2017.
Yeah, we're running out of time.
Yes, it's coming here soon, so yeah. Suspiria is definitely a film to check out. This is a great one for those who are uninitiated to horror, for those that want a real true scare, and an unexpected scare or unexpected series of scares. This kind of will give it all to you.
Excellent choice.
All right, so should we go now? What we also want to do in this podcast is we want to give you guys, in addition to the 5 we gave you, the 10 we gave you, we want to give you another one, an extra, a bonus.
Well, we're going to give you one to watch.
One to watch and one to stay the hell away from.
Right, because, and this one, and I have,
and
I'll have some fun with that.
Sometimes these things could be interchangeable.
Right. So, Mike, you want to lead with your pick?
My pick, yeah. My pick is a 2016 film. I'm coming into the new era. This is a film I watched last night. Sorry.
Okay.
Didn't watch it with Eric.
Hey.
And I fell asleep, and I need to go back and rewatch it, but I'm going to recommend it anyway just because it's a pretty cool film, and it was, as I understand, it was done as a Kickstarter campaign. They raised, I think, initially around $80,000 to get this film going. It's a film called The Void. And
I saw The Void.
Oh, see, there you go. It's good. It's a good film. It gets a little weird at the end.
It's kind of a hot mess.
Because you get the H.P. Lovecraft thing going on, which
yes.
is always a hot mess because there's a lot of opium and maybe some other things happening.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that there was any opium on the set of The Void, but it definitely gets weird at the end. And there's a very strange scene at the very end.
Yes.
Some of it had some kind of throwback moments, throwback qualities to the 1980s.
I'd say that there's that heavily influenced by The Thing.
Oh, sure. Yep.
And then and some of another Carpenter film, Prince of Darkness.
Yep. Absolutely. But there is a scene, I will tell you, since my whole list was very scene-driven, there is a scene at the beginning of the film that will, if you don't like people with sharp things in their eyeballs. This is probably a film to stay away from. it's one of the first things you see, and it's pretty darn grisly. So, yes. Eric, what do you got for us? What should folks look out for? Go to the video store.
Okay.
Break out the beta tape.
So this is, yes. So I am once again going old school.
Yes.
And because it's sort of, this is sort of a broad wash introduction from us to you. I am going with the 1982 George Romero. See, I thought I wasn't going to go George Romero, but actually I can go in Romero here. I'm going Creepshow.
Right.
Which is the...
That's a great one.
It's an anthology, and I...
Get a little Stephen King.
Yeah, and Stephen King actually acting in it, if you call it acting. It's kind of hit and miss. There's some... My favorite one was the thing in the box.
Yeah, that's a good one.
And it was Adrian Barbeau and Hal Holbrook in that one. There was also Ted Danson's in this thing with Leslie Nielsen.
Right.
I mean, it's great, great cast. And this was at a time when they would do sort of mid-budget horror movies, and which I think I'm encouraged that I think it, the film that just came out, is an indicator that I think that the movie production companies are going to start getting back into these mid-budget horror movies, because if they're done well, they're going to make money.
Yep.
But this is like you didn't see actors of the quality that we got in Creepshow, which is an out-and-out sort of horror anthology.
Yep.
But it's fun. I think more than anything else, it's zippy. There's strong homage to the EC comics of the 1950s.
Yes.
Where
not
there's...
Just, the, not just the movie poster.
No, but the whole thing, because it's kind of teaching you a lesson. It's like, don't do this. It's like, if you get too uptight about being clean, you're going to learn a lesson.
There's a subversive nature to it as well.
It's very
subversive.
It's wicked. And it's silly and it's fun. Go check it out if you haven't done so. I don't know if it's on Netflix, but if you're a younger horror movie fan and you haven't seen this, it's a treat.
Yeah, go to the junk store, get a VHS.
Yes,
that's the only way to watch it. Standard definition, or whatever became before standard definition.
So I think we have now given you a full list of homework to go check out. My guess is that you're going to be, if you're a loose horror movie fan, you know our favorites.
Yes.
But what's
a film people should stay away from?
Oh, the one you stay... Okay.
Very quickly. What should you stay away from?
This one was one, and I blame Mike for this.
We've given everybody lots of cool stuff, but what do you stay away from?
Okay, there was a movie that Mike raved about, and we went to the theater, and there was a bunch of us who went to it. And I think Mike was the only one who actually liked it.
Oh, wait a sec.
Okay. It was painful to watch for me.
Yeah.
Can you guess what it was?
House of a Thousand Corpses.
Yes!
Yes, well...
Okay, so Rob Zombie...
Yes, in retrospect, it's a terrible film. I'm gonna agree with you.
It breaks my number one rule. I hated everybody in the movie. And sometimes when you hate the protagonists in the movie, you want them to die, but I didn't care. I hated the villains. I hated the art direction was, and I think that Rob Zombie gets pretty assertive with his art direction. I think he's trying to channel a little bit of Dario Argento with some of his broad, bright colors and the trippy stuff, like an acid bath kind of a thing. But it's mean.
Yeah.
It's a mean movie where you don't like it, and it's not acted well.
Right.
It's gross, but not gross in a way that's memorable. There's no memorable scenes in it. All I remember is just, I just don't want to be here anymore. Yeah. And afterwards, it was like, Mike, you betrayed me. This was supposed to, you were raving about this movie.
Rob Zombie has the reverse Midas touch. I think his heart's in the right place. Yeah. I think he has a definite respect for the genre, but everything he touches turns to a big stinking pile of poop.
Yeah.
And I mean everything.
he has not delivered, and yet he still is allowed to produce.
Yep. All right, so the film I think you should stay away for, this is going to be provocative, not as Eric's was not provocative. This is provocative. The film to stay away from, we also saw together.
Oculus?
Not Oculus, okay. But that's for That'll be for a later podcast. So let's we'll cue that up for the next one. No, this is a film I think had everybody scared. The book had everybody scared. The story had everybody scared. I think the story is still legitimately scary. The Amityville Horror.
Oh yeah,
boy, such a scary premise at a time when, you know, again, this was sort of pre-Satan scare of the 1980s. This was the 1970s. The occult was big. Charles Manson, rest in peace, was still kicking around and had everybody scared. You know, there's a lot of weird, freaky stuff going on, and this certainly fit that mold. But the film itself is just kind of boring.
It's dreary.
The film is boring. The acting is boring. James Brolin is boring. All the performances are boring. They're either boring or they're overacted in the case of the priest, in the case of the wife. They're just not great.
There's no payoff.
Yeah, and it's tough to take. I mean, just as Rob Zombie took kind of an interesting premise of a bunch of, you know, sideshow freaks hunting people down, which seems like a pretty good premise for a horror film.
Sure.
This one, they took a great story that had the nation raptured. I mean, if you watched The In Search Of, Leonard Nimoy, rest in peace. If you watched The In Search Of about the Amityville Horror, you would have been pretty freaked out, let alone, you know, actually sat down and read the book. But when the film came out, I think a lot of people went and saw it because of all the hype around it, but not a great film.
It's disappointing because I think it had a rep.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah. For sure.
But, okay, so here's my question to you. James Wan, of Conjuring fame.
Right.
Who also the... What's the name of our protagonists? The
Annabelle.
The ghost hunters. No. The
Paranormal Activity.
No. The real ghost chasers. There are the Warrens.
Thank you. The Warren
family.
Yes.
So they were famous because of the Amityville
horror.
But which is also what, you know, so Conjuring, a very good movie.
Yep.
Conjuring 2, a pretty good movie
pretty
in its
solid.
Own right.
Pretty solid.
At some point, he's going to touch Amityville. Do you think he should?
Absolutely. Because I think
redeem it.
I think it needs to be redeemed. It's a great story. I think it's still a great story. It's a very compelling story. And somebody needs to tell that story.
Yeah. And, you know, and I think at this point, I think, you know, Patrick Wilson and Mia Farmiga, who are your two leads in The Conjuring, are... really good.
Yeah,
they sell it. I think, and you know, I know we're extending our time a little bit here, but just to throw a little bit of love to Conjuring's way, that's a movie that was rated R without bad language, without visceral violence, and without any sex or nudity. It was rated R for being scary.
Right.
And it's like, when was the last time you've seen it? I can't think of any movie that just like they didn't have a reason that they wanted to call it R other than they thought that it was just going to be too scary for people.
Yep. Yep. No, it's a solid film. Solid film, which I think we'll also get to on a later podcast. So you wanna close this up? What do you think of our first podcast?
Yeah.
Do you think we hit the nail on the head?
Yeah. Tell me why Mike is wrong. And I will admit, I think that Mike had a very good list this time. There wasn't as much sort of sparring on this one. I thought there was going to be a couple that I might have to argue for, but this is again spontaneous podcast. We'd love to get your input, and we hope that you share our love of the horror genre. And if there are any things that you would like us to cover, please let us know. And we are the Scariest Things Podcast at
www.scariestthings.com.
Until next time. These are a few of our scariest things.
Matthew? Is that you?
Hi. Look. Love you. I stopped this fool around, you hear? Who's in there, damn it?
This must be where the executioner was killed. It's the legend.